Welcome to Route 31 Credit Union's business podcast, The Extra Mile. My name is Nick Green, and I am the host. And today I'm joined by Eric Seifert from Left Coast Capital. Eric is a financial intermediary, or as laymen may call it, a business broker. Eric, thanks so much for being here. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. So let's roll into it. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where'd you go to school, and here we are today. So,
well, I've lived my entire life on the lakeshore, other than 2 years in Ann Arbor for school. I like to say if Ann Arbor were on Lake Michigan, I might still be there, but it's not, so I'm not.
Yeah.
But born in Muskegon, raised in Norton Shores, in and out of Grand Haven a couple times, so I'm a lakeshore guy. That's the basics of it.
Good stuff. You mentioned you went to Ann Arbor for school.
Right.
U of M?
Yeah, U of M Business School. After 2 years here at Muskegon Community College, went to Mona Shores for elementary and high school.
Go Blue. I love it. So let's talk a little bit about your journey into becoming a business broker and tell us a little bit about how that kind of lined up to be Left Coast Capital.
Well, I like to say I'm a recovering banker. I was a banker for 32
recovering.
Years. Business banker.
Nice.
Put a lot of people in business in the 80s and 90s with loans to start or buy businesses. And now they call me, common theme is, Eric, you got me in this now. Get me the heck out. So I love working with people full cycle. But yeah, I got out of banking in 2008.
Good time to get out of banking.
It was a good time to get out of banking. Yeah. And I was working for a small community bank, and they were having a tough time, so I voluntarily took a hike. I went to work for the Small Business Development Center program at Grand Valley State University. It's a program that is it's actually nationwide, supported by the Small Business Administration, and in the state of Michigan, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation funds half of it.
Nice.
Mission is to help businesses start, expand, survive, fine-tune, and I developed their exit planning program. Big organization, state of Michigan, they have like 120 advisors and then probably twice as many support staff. So it's a big organization.
What's the name of the organization that Grand Valley appears? What is
the Small Business Development Center?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
That's the name of the.
How's that? Is it? There's a SCORE as well, right?
SCORE is a sister organization.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I'm not sure what the letters mean now. It used to be Service Corps for retired executives, but I think they've jazzed it up since then. But similar organization. The difference is SCORE is volunteers, retired people, whereas the SBDC is currently employed people employed by that program. But both very, very valuable entrepreneurial support organizations.
So you got your start through there and
yeah, worked with them 10 years. Absolutely loved it. After working a while in developing the SBDC's exit planning program, I determined there's no business broker in Muskegon County, a county of 180,000 people.
Yeah.
So I exited 8 years ago, wrote my own exit plan from the SBDC, started my business brokerage. And shortly thereafter, I noticed that it was really difficult and maybe even painful to watch a first-time business buyer go from their credit union to a bank, whatever, probably talking the wrong things, trying to get a loan for purchase of a business. So I started assisting with that since I'd done that my entire career. And I started working with different SBA banks all over the country. 3 years ago, approached by a banker buddy who was retiring as well. He wanted to establish a formal SBA loan brokerage agency, which we did. Similar to a mortgage broker, we represent a lot of banks across the country. You go to your bank or credit union and they offer a certain number of products for a mortgage. But if you go to a broker, they'll represent many banks and many different programs. We offer the same thing.
Very cool. So you kind of just expanded off of that. Mentioned exit planning a few times, and it's sounds like it's just as crucial as a startup would be in getting started, having an exit plan. Can you dive in a little bit about what that actually is and how businesses should plan for that?
Yeah, it is crucial, Nick. In fact, it becomes the most important transaction of a business person's life, getting out of business. You know, you've got one shot at doing it right. If it doesn't come out right, you can't redo it unless the business goes under and you have to take it back. But so it is very important. And it's not very well known. It's coming into vogue more and more now with the so-called silver tsunami, all us gray-haired guys hitting the beach selling our businesses.
Those beach highlights.
But it's not rocket science, but it takes a coordinated effort of a team, the team being the company's accountant, attorney, wealth advisor, sometimes the bank or credit union, and then usually a business broker as a quarterback of sorts.
Okay. So what? How soon, if I owned a business, what years am I thinking about getting out of that? Or how soon should you start planning, exit planning? Because with startups, yeah, I mean, you just get going and you kind of figure it out as you go.
Right.
And I think business owners, to some degree, kind of do that through their entire business life cycles, just kind of figure it out as they go.
That's exactly right.
Where, you know, when should they start thinking of exit planning strategy?
Well, sometimes, but not always, people write a business plan to start a business, right? But not always. Very rarely do they write a plan to exit the business. They just don't realize. And it's really quite complex because, you know, starting a business, you just start doing business and you grow, you add staff and customers and whatnot. And
right.
Things kind of gel over time. With exit planning, you've got to bring certain people to the table right away to get things in order. I suggest 3 to 5 years in advance of a planned exit. The really savvy people that start a business today have the exit plan in mind when they write the business plan.
Really?
Whether they want to go public or sell out to a bigger or just set up the company so that it's saleable. So it involves looking at the numbers and making sure that the numbers are correct and properly presented. Sometimes you have to get a different accountant involved or a different attorney. If the company's been using an attorney that primarily just does leases and general business things, you need a attorney that knows transactions, because chances are the buyer on the other side will have a lawyer with real experience, and then you're behind the eight ball immediately.
Gotcha.
Another important thing is building a management team. The most valuable business is one where the owner can be gone for a month at a time and not get a phone call from the office whatsoever. The team is running it.
Yeah. Efficiencies are in place and it's kind of running
right.
Autopilot too. Well, I shouldn't say autopilot, but they're handling business pretty while
much.
You're away.
Yeah, yeah. So the buyer looks at it as pretty much plug and play. He can come in. He doesn't have to learn a lot from the seller, the boss, because he's got the team running it.
Yeah.
And then over time can make changes and fine-tune the organization to his liking and move forward. So those are the main components. One of the challenges we deal with, though, regularly is a business owner's concept of value of the business.
Yeah.
Only two times in my 50-some year career working with businesses have I heard a business owner think that his business was worth less than it actually is. It's because people read or hear something about someone getting five times the number of their business. They think it might be the top number, but it's actually the bottom number with adjustments. That's one of the major work that we do, is looking at the numbers and then digging through them and determining what expenses might not a new buyer need to incur. What is discretionary?
Mm-hmm.
Those can be added back to the bottom line to increase the disclosed cash flow of the business, and that's what determines the value. It's the cash flow of the business that determines what the value is, not the assets themselves. Unless it's in liquidation.
Gotcha. So you talked a little bit about it, and we'll be backtracking a little bit. What are some common misconceptions that a business owner might have about selling their business? You kind of brushed on them real quick, but maybe some deeper nuances to that.
Yeah, well, the valuation thing is by far the biggest, but others include who might be interested in buying the business. Sometimes they have a opinion of the business that is quite in excess of what the real market out there might be.
Yeah.
Another is how to handle cash flow. Some people still think that you have to hide money from the government to really make it, but you do that.
Which we do not recommend.
We do not recommend. It actually bites you in the rear because, again, the...
can't borrow later, usually.
Valuation is based on the cash flow of the business, and the bank is going to take a look at the reported cash flow, the tax returns.
Yep.
And they can look at additional information and whatnot, but basically, if they find out that the seller's been cheating the government, they're not going to get involved because what might that same seller do to some poor unsuspecting buyer? Right. You know, what skeletons are in the closet? So you need to deal with integrity.
Nice. So there's a lot to think about, and it's unique to me that they, when they write the business plan to get into business, now they're starting to actually write the exit plan too.
Right.
I think it's a great exercise. Obviously, that can be adjusted as you develop and grow the business. So going back to the value, the other touch point I wanted to bring up. So what you kind of brushed on it real quick, but let's deep dive a little bit more. What are the main factors, again, in determining that value of the business?
Well, aside from the cash flow, the type of business, what industry it's in, and its size can determine a lot of the valuation, in that larger businesses will pay more money for acquiring a larger business than the small business, kind of economy of scale.
Yeah.
So when I look at databases on what's called industry multiples, the factor that the relationship of the selling price to the cash flow of the business, a relatively larger business will have a higher multiple than a smaller business. And then it depends on the industry they're in. If it's a popular industry like information technology, precision manufacturing, those multiples will be higher than, say, a gift shop or a floral shop or really almost anything retail.
Yeah.
So it's the size in the industry that matters. And there are various databases that... can be subscribed to. The data's contributed by accountants, bankers, brokers like me, and then it's consolidated and analyzed and then published so that business valuation people can take a look at what similar businesses have sold for across the state, across the country.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. We did an SBA loan this year and had to do a business valuation, and the business owner was pleasantly surprised at what it came back at, but it was kind of unique to read the report and kind of look at the industry analysis and comparative businesses in the area, or even, you know, in the Midwest, even they compared them to a little bit.
Right.
And it was kind of cool to see, and he's, well, maybe I do better than I thought I did, you know, and it's,
great.
It's a good reflection of the work that they put in and to see that number. So you mentioned earlier that, you've only had one think that it was less than what it was actually worth. Is that what you said?
Yeah, but
so
go ahead.
That's interesting because people always think, like, there's an old saying in sales, right? Anything, things are worth whatever someone will pay for it. So I feel like business owners, their expectations maybe don't align with market realities.
Often, yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you navigate those? That's probably a tough conversation, I imagine. It's their baby.
Yeah. So. And let me mention one exception to that rule is if something I see fairly frequently is an aging business owner who's lost energy or whatever in his business, so it's kind of slid. Maybe it's not making much money anymore, and so they don't think it's worth anything. Well, by the same token, there are a lot of startups still occurring today.
Yeah.
And people take on a lot of risk when they start a business from scratch. So if they would look at a business that's run by an aging entrepreneur, maybe the numbers are in the trough, not in the total trash can, but in the trough, they're not actually worth much more than maybe the assets put together. But to someone that's going to be starting a similar business or a business that can use the infrastructure that was put together for the existing business, they can get a pretty good valuation for a business that has the infrastructure in place, staff, which is as important as anything. In fact, I'll argue today that good staff is worth more than good customers, because without good staff, you can't keep those good customers.
Right.
Anyhow, so that's one of the challenges. But yeah, early on, we hit the valuation on the head, and I always asked, do you have any idea what your business might be worth? And then when I hear a number, I ask, well, how did you come up with that number, and try to make some sense out of it? And maybe a neighbor sold his business for $3 million, and I know I got a better business than him. Mine's $5 million.
Yeah.
And then I go through the computations of how value is derived and whatnot, and show them the databases that show what the multiples are. And a lot of times they'll come along. Sometimes they just absolutely refuse to. If the difference between my valuation and what they think is really significant, sometimes I'll pass on the opportunity, because it's tough to go to market with a price that's way out of whack, and then eventually have to make several price reductions. That doesn't look good. So,
have you dealt with a lot of those situations?
A couple.
Or do you typically just don't?
Well, dealt with a couple, but having been doing this for 8 years now, I'm taking on fewer and fewer of those that have the big stretch like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine that's, I mean, basically you're walking it through their own logic. A lot of times they're ending up like, oh, maybe that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, which creates another dynamic to that conversation. So,
sometimes that works, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it works. Sometimes they might get more defensive, I can imagine. So can you share a success story where exit planning significantly increased the value or the appeal of the business?
I was working with large local foundry a couple years ago, and we were struggling with decreasing margins because the owner hadn't been increasing prices along the way. That's a common theme with small businesses. They're just shy of raising prices. But
upset
we looked at
the customers they do have. And,
right.
Yeah.
But we looked at a number of parts that were short run and kind of a hassle and low margin, and we decided, well, we're going to raise the price 40-60% on these parts, and if they go away, fine. If they don't, we'll have increased margins. Well, no one left. Absolutely no one left. And most of the price increases were up around 60%. So the company became more profitable, more valuable. The owner's been retired for two years now, and he's a very happy guy.
I was going to say, did he want to retire after that happened? He's like, man, I should have done this 10 years ago.
Right.
Why didn't I run into you? That's awesome. So next, what's been your favorite success story? Is that one of your favorites, or you think of one that really drove it home and said, man, this is why I do what I do?
Yeah, one deal that I did that I'm kind of making as a model going forward, my main theme is to work with family businesses selling to other families, other family businesses. I do not like to work with people out of the area that have a propensity to close the business and move it, or if they keep it here, they'll make the company more efficient, which sometimes means treating your employees differently and cutting out local suppliers, dropping the local chamber of commerce, becoming very efficient, but cold and black and white rather than a community asset. So I don't deal at all with out-of-state buyers or private equity buyers. One deal I did recently was a company, actually, I was the banker for the father who founded the company, and the daughter at age 55 decided she wanted to exit. That's the age that her father exited at. And speaking with her about her legacy and what her father would like to see, we determined that we really wanted to keep this business local. It's a great little Norton Shores-based business, 24 employees. So I did not advertise the business at all. I called four or five individuals, other companies that might be interested, had three offers in a limited amount of time.
Wow.
But when it came together, it was actually the son of one of my angel investors. I run a group of 25 angel investors here in Muskegon, the Muskegon Angel Program. And dad wanted him back in town. The son was growing grandkids in Houston, Texas, and dad wanted him here in town. So the young man, well, he's 40. It's all relative, right? he raised $500,000 on his own from sale of some investment properties he's had.
Wow.
My angel group came together and invested $1 million in seven-year quiet equity money.
Wow.
With mentorship alongside it to keep the business local.
That's awesome.
Somehow private equity people got wind of it, were calling me left and right. I politely excused myself from the conversation. But that was such a great deal, keeping the business local. The owner's doing fantastic, growing 25-30% a year.
Wow.
We're looking for other deals to do like that. I've got the backing of the angel program that can put in capital, but even more important to capital is mentorship. So we're looking at other deals to sometimes bring a young expat back into the fold here or just to keep a business local. We're looking for sizable businesses, $5 million to $20 million in revenue that might be coming on the block soon and want to keep that ownership local. The local economic development people, GMED and the Chamber, they all recognize the importance of local ownership.
Yeah, 100%.
Volunteering, charitable contributions, they all increase with local ownership. The ownership goes away and they're not that interested in the community.
Yeah, sense of pride stays there with local ownership.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the Angel Investors Group, they're all looking for similar situations of that nature.
Right. They're looking to support to create and retain jobs in Muskegon County.
When did you form that?
That was formed in 2013.
2013.
Yeah,
2013. 1913. Holy smokes. Eric, come on.
Yeah, I'm on my second wind here.
Oh, good. So kind of a fun question to end all this, wrap it up. Appreciate all this. This is such great information for anyone out there. If you weren't a business broker or a financial intermediary, what other profession could you see yourself doing?
Probably retired, yeah. Yeah. 71 years old and
touché.
I love what I'm doing, and I'm one of very few people in the area that does this particular function, so I can't imagine doing anything else.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me today. It's a lot of fun to have you on and learn more about your business, what you do. Kind of know already, wink, wink, but it was good to hear it, and I think the public's and the local community is going to greatly appreciate this input. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.